Welcome to the Dr. Mary Louder podcast show, where we explore the messy, magical, and deeply human journey of healing. I'm your host, Dr. Mary Louder, a board-certified osteopathic physician, an accidental shaman, and a lifelong student of the human experience. Together, we're going to talk medicine, wellness, and culture in a way that's grounded, perhaps maybe a bit cheeky, but always from the heart. And don't miss Gadgets, Gimmicks, and Gotchas, my reoccurring segment where we lovingly call out the fluff and highlight the stuff that actually works. So grab your favorite brew, coffee, matcha, or that mysteriously green smoothie and settle in. It's time to get this party started with a strong dose of soul medicine. Welcome to our podcast, the Dr. Mary Louder Show. Today, we're going to be talking about hormone therapy. And there's a story that I've been wanting to tell you. It's the story of how we, as a medical culture, have understood and misunderstood the role of hormones in women's health. And this is a deep and complex conversation, but it's going to be great. But let's begin this story and start with what we know as a small cream-colored pill way back in the 1940s, Premarin, which was a hormone therapy made from the urine of pregnant mares. That became widely available as a treatment for menopausal symptoms in women. It promised relief, vitality, and even glamour, if you can imagine that. And for many women, it helped. But it was also a product of its time, and it was formulated in high doses, prescribed often without personalization. And it was rooted in a medical system that saw menopause not as a natural transition, but as a disease to be fixed. By the 1960s and the 70s, hormone therapy had become a cultural symbol. It was youthful femininity, staying attractive and balanced through often without scientific backing. And the marketing was very, very strong. The research, not so much, until the Women's Health Initiative 2005, which was a large government-funded study. That was halted early because the research showed the increased risk of breast cancer, stroke, heart disease, bone disease in women using combined hormone therapy. Panic swept the medical community. Prescriptions plummeted. Many women were abruptly taken off their hormones and were miserable, confused, felt frustrated. As time passed, the data was more carefully understood. More studies were out there. More studies then came to the forefront. And we found that the timing, the dosing, the structure of the hormone molecules themselves provided not a one-size-fits-all, but an individual approach to the care of menopause in women. And so we've witnessed a powerful recalibration. And today we know that timing matters, how we take the hormones, when we take it. And it appears not only to be safe, but for many women, potentially protective. The black box warning is off. Bioidentical hormones, lower doses, individualized compounding. These are all now the tools we use and have access to as we prescribe for women more precisely, with reverence and with care. But there is something that we can't ignore in this story that for too long, women's health has been marginalized, under-researched, underfunded, and sometimes even dismissed outright. Hormones were seen as too complex, women's bodies unpredictable. And that's a bias, and that still lingers. It lives in how we talk about symptoms, how we train physicians, how we fund research, and most painfully, how some women are still made to feel when they seek care from their physician or provider. And yet, here we are, reclaiming our clarity, our voice, grounding ourselves in both science and story, making space for informed choice, nuanced care, and the power of listening. So this episode is a part of that reclamation, a conversation that I'm eager to share with a woman who stands at the heart of the shift. That is Mary Heim, and she's a pharmacist and a hormone expert and owns Rivertown Compounding Pharmacy in West Michigan. Together in conversation, we're going to explore what hormone therapy is when it's rooted in respect, precision, and dare I say, love. So let's settle in and begin Welcome, Mary Heim.
Well, welcome. This is the Mary's podcast. Mary Heim, who is a pharmacist and a compounding pharmacist, and myself, Dr. Mary Lauder. So welcome, Mary, and I'm so glad that you joined me today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. And we know each other professionally. You do work on behalf of the multitude of my patients. And I look to you for expertise in HR, in hormone replacement therapy, not only just bioidentical, but just really understanding some of the nuances that patients get into a conundrum about. And I feel that as a physician, you've got to have a team to care for patients. And I've put you or requested you to be on my team because I just use the top-notch folks. So, I really appreciate your insight, your expertise, how your pharmacy handles patients, and how it serves West Michigan. So I just want to give a shout out to that at Rivertown Compounding Pharmacy in Granville, because it's just an important service that you provide for West Michigan and Michigan. And I'm really grateful to have you today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I hope there's going to be more compounding pharmacies opening in West Michigan and giving patients lots of options. I think it's a really, really necessary service.
It really, really is. Because what we're finding, and before we get into the nitty-gritty of the questions, what we're finding is personalized care is the roadmap through the change in life. Perimenopause, menopause, maybe even areas of infertility and other, gynecological diagnoses that women struggle with their entire adult life.
Yes. Yes. It's, you can try commercial products, and there's lots of good bioidentical commercial products, but if they don't fit, you need to have options and you need to have places to go for those patients.
That's right. So take us right there to that definition between the bioidentical options, the pharmaceutical options, and what does even bioidentical mean? I think people get confused.
Get confused.
Okay. All right. I do too. I'll throw my hat in on that one too then. But walk us through what the difference is and what those definitions really mean.
Okay. And one of the things I get caught up with a lot is somebody will ask me if the hormones we compound are natural. And that's a really hard question to answer, because to be natural, we'd have to be taking them from another human woman. And we're not really doing that. Bioidentical hormones are chemically identical. So the chemical structure is identical to the hormones your body produces. So we know what the chemical structure of estradiol is, or progesterone is, or testosterone is. Mm-hmm. And we can make that exact chemical structure and give it back to your body. Is that natural? Well, no, we're not taking it from another human being naturally. A lot of times the source material is wild yams.
Okay. So what I'm hearing then is the chemical structure, then that would hit the receptor, which would be the estradiol receptor, E2 receptor, in a way that would match how it would, or maybe mimic what a woman's natural estradiol would look like.
Yes. And when you metabolize it out of the body, those pathways are already in place in the liver to metabolize it out correctly. So if we tweak that molecule and change it in some way, add a couple little side chains to it, it'll stick around in the body longer, but it's no longer bioidentical. It doesn't go down those pathways. And that's what I call synthetic hormones, when those molecules have been tweaked.
Okay. What would be the name, the most common name of a synthetic hormone then?
Medroxyprogesterone, okay. Or Provera.
Provera. Now, and is that the same as progestin?
Progestin is a group name.
Okay.
So progestins cover all synthetic progestins.
Got it.
So that would be the progestins that are in birth control. There's a whole bunch of them, norethindrone, but all those molecules are tweaked, where progesterone is bioidentical to what the body makes. There's no tweaking of that molecule, adding side chains, making it work differently.
Okay. So I learned many years ago that when you use a progestin or a synthetic progesterone or progestin, it is like a master key going into a house that could open many, many doors versus progesterone that is bioidentical, no added aspects, goes into a lock and key within a room or a closet within the house. It's very specific where it goes.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So it would be that master key that you could open up a lot of rooms and closets and areas that you don't really want to go to, right?
Yep. I view it pretty simple as, you know, you're going to have side effects there that you're not going to have with the natural progesterone, you know, but you're also going to have effects that are sometimes desired. We use progestins in oral birth control. And it flattens out ovulation. We're not going to really do that with natural hormones. We couldn't make a natural hormone birth control because your body can adjust to the natural hormones and metabolize them out.
Okay, right. So then that's the other component is the molecules with added extras don't metabolize.
Correct.
And so then they gather.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Where's the most common spots they gather?
They'll stay stuck onto the receptors, so they won't release. Okay. So they'll stay stuck onto the receptors and not release. So they won't gather in the blood levels. You know, we won't see, people will say, well, I got my blood levels checked and they're all low, so I need hormones. And then they'll tell me they were on birth control. Well, of course your blood levels are low.
We don't the receptors.
Yeah.
Because the goal is to block those receptors.
Right. Right. So they're sitting in all those tissues and all the cells and not letting go. Okay. And then they could also back up in the liver, which is what metabolizes out all the molecules in your body, the liver, kidney.
Right. Okay. This is a really important point because when women are taking the synthetic added on molecules and they've taken them for years and then they go off of them and their cycles maybe return to normal, but they may be around menopause. Or if a physician or provider prescribes birth control around menopause, just to control the irregular bleeding, just to make things not so bad, just to take care of the hot flashes, all you're doing is blocking the receptors and you're not really allowing that natural phase of perimenopause into menopause to really progress very normally. Am I
correct?
Okay.
Yes.
That sounds like something we shouldn't do.
it depends on the patient, you know, for the majority of the patients, no.
Right.
But sometimes there's rare patients where nothing else works.
Right.
So I'm kind of, let's individualize it again. Let's make it individualized to what's happening. You know, we'll have general guidelines and then we'll individualize it to each patient.
And I've always maintained that if we look at a woman's entire menstrual history, premenarche to menarche, which is when you have your first period, all the way through your menstruation and the different changes that you can somewhat predict relatively how they might handle menopause.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so I've used menopause not as a disease to treat or as an affliction to have or something that's in your head and just get over it or just suck it up, buttercup, right?
Yeah.
I use it as a time to pause because it's a menopause to see what's next. What's life about? What was life like? What do I want the next stages to look like? What do I need to learn from all of my menstrual history? Because we have things that words that we throw around like estrogen dominance and progesterone intolerance. And I mean, and then people go, well, how can you be intolerant to the things you're making? You know, and so these are real valid questions because frankly, physicians haven't addressed them. And frankly, physicians have dismissed this. And, you know, I think that that many women have questions around how does it make sense that we're intolerant to who we are? Well, that might be an esoteric question or a soul level question. and I'm willing to go there, but maybe not right now. But that's one part of it. But how do you see that messaging about, well, I'm just this and I'm just that? I mean, those labels are thrown around pretty quickly.
A lot of times it's a misunderstanding. Okay. You know, it's I'm progestin intolerant, not progesterone intolerant. Or I can't handle as high of a dose. I'm not intolerant. I need a much lower dose. Right. So it's slapping a label on something instead of looking for the details, drilling down into the details.
Okay. So when I drill into the details, I use a genomic study. And I use lifestyle, you know, medicine, genomic studies. And I also map the hormone pathways with their genes. I also look at biotransformation and methylation and sulfation and glucuronidation and, you know, and ubiquination and conjugation and hydroxylation. I look at all those pathways. And when I put that together, I get a very elegant map that it could be an adventure instead of a scary drive.
Right. Correct. Yeah. Yeah. The more information you have, the better decisions you can make. Right. And like you said, we need to gather that information for these women. We need to stop saying, get over it, or it's natural. Yes, it's natural. But if you're symptomatic, that's not natural. Right. So if you're having symptoms, we have to figure out why you're having symptoms and resolve those symptoms. Mm-hmm. And they may not be treatment. They may be helping you metabolize things better. Mm-hmm. You know,
that's right.
Helping your own system work better. There's so many options but we need to listen to those symptoms and help those women resolve those symptoms.
Yes, exactly right. Okay. So next question. Let's go into how the conversation has changed in the past number of years about hormone replacement therapy, bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, and then we'll go poke that black box.
Okay. Which has been removed.
So let's do that kind of like a systematic, systematic pathway. Let's follow our pathways and go, and then we'll see if the black box warning opened up Pandora's box instead. Right? I'm just, yeah. You know, so go for it.
Okay. Prior to about 2003, 2004, 2005, women hit menopause in this country, and they were put on Premarin, which is conjugated equine estrogens, which is definitely a synthetic. It's not human. Mm-hmm. And it was oral. And if they had a uterus, they were put on Provera, the one I mentioned. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty much standard therapy. There wasn't a lot of other options. Right. And then in 2005, the Women's Health Initiative came out. Mm-hmm. And the takeaway that was presented to the public from that study, and I'm not saying the study showed this, this was the takeaway that was presented, mm-hmm. was all hormones are bad, hormones cause cancer, mm-hmm. don't take hormones. Mm-hmm. So since about 2005, we've been telling women, hormones are bad for you, you'll just have to get through menopause without them, mm-hmm. we'll figure out something else, we'll give you an antidepressant. And some of the antidepressants do help lower hot flashes. I'm not saying they don't work, mm-hmm. but that's introducing another drug synthetic into the system instead of treating the problem. Right. So that's kind of, and then we moved a little bit back into, hey, hormones are okay for short periods of time. Mm-hmm. You know, treat symptoms for short periods of time and then get off of them. Mm-hmm. But that entire time we were doing this to our female population, there's lots of studies out there that show, yes, medroxyprogesterone is a problem with developing certain types of cancer. Yes, it has certain side effects. Yes, it has certain cardiac risks. Mm-hmm. But progesterone doesn't have those same risks.
That's right.
Estrogen doesn't have that same risk. Right. Oral estrogen increases risk of cardiac strokes. Mm-hmm. Transdermal or vaginal do not. Mm-hmm. All those subtle details were already available. Mm-hmm. So it took the right practitioner to kind of walk the woman through this minefield. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping now that we've removed that black box warning and are hopefully just assigning it to the drug it should be assigned to, medroxyprogesterone, mm-hmm. will open up at least the dialogue more of how do we treat this properly? And do hormones help with bone health? Do hormones help with brain health, yes. cardiac health, if yes. we start them at the right time?
Yes. Oh, that wasn't a quiz.
Yeah.
The answer is yes to all.
Yes.
All of the above, right? If you're yes. interested. Yeah. And, you know, I prescribed bioidenticals from 2000 forward. I'll never forget the lady who brought in a Meyer bag, dumped it on the exam table and said, "You got to help me. None of this is working." I'm like, "What is this stuff?" It was chasteberry. It was evening primrose. It was yam jam because it was topical yam cream. And I'm like, I have no clue. I said, but this is fascinating. And it piqued my curiosity. And then I did the dive. And so I had been prescribing. I took everybody off of Primarin. And I went through, of course, I went through medical school and residency knowing what Primarin was. But then when it hit me, like around 1997, it hit me. I'm like, wait a minute, that's pregnant Mary's urine, like horse pee. I'm like, so then I adapted the line. Well, if a horse is trying to get rid of it, I probably don't want to prescribe it for a patient. And so that's kind of been my tagline for the last 30 years, you know, just not doing it. And then Oprah did a big thing around yes. 2010.
Yes.
You get a hormone. Look at your seat. You've got a hormone. And when I was practicing up in Traverse City at that time, and my practice just went kaboom because everybody needed and wanted hormones. And we did such a fun job. And at that time, I was using the Dutch test. And so that's, what is that, 15 years ago, right? And walking women through things. And I had some women who had had, you know, fibroid uteruses, who had endometriosis or adenomyosis, who had really bad PMS, really bad migraines associated with that. And so I knew enough biochemistry that I started adding magnesium and some zinc and little doses of B vitamins, not a lot, because too much B vitamins made it worse. And I just kind of made my way through by watching and treating. And that's called clinical medicine, by the way.
Yes. Yes.
And I did that for a decade. And then I added genomic testing. And all of a sudden, the pathways were right there. The genes were right there. The things that I knew to treat but had questions about were right there. My guessing went away. Totally. And people really need to hear this, that we can literally personalize your roadmap. Not just for hormones, but for biotransformation, detoxification, oxidative stress, inflammation, cardiovascular health, the right foods to eat and the right exercise to do and the right ways to make your bones strong. Why wouldn't we be signing up for that in addition to having hormones that support it? And then what I found is my doses of hormones decreased.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Once I understood the pathways and the patterns of the pathways, I didn't have to make people get hormone levels back to their 20s.
No.
Because that's not what we're going for. We're going for cardiovascular protection. That means the lining of the blood vessels have hormone receptors that respond to estrogen. Estrogen decreases inflammation. Estrogen makes insulin work better. Insulin, estrogen makes those receptors within the lining of the blood vessels stay open rather than shut. It blocks and it helps the cholesterol stay healthy. So it helps with that low density to high density ratio. And so then all of a sudden the blood vessels were healthier. And women, because the number one killer of women is heart attacks.
Right.
Although when I put that out on social media, everybody thought it was husbands. So apologies to the husbands. It's not. Although, no, it's not.
Was it a multiple choice answer and they all answered husband?
I got a lot of husbands, LOL, in the replies. And that was really quite funny. Because I asked the question, what's the number one killer? And boom, 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 boom. Their thumbs went wild. And so, but it's heart disease, which we haven't done well with women either. And that's the other thing. But then coming back about them, you know, the different ways, let's talk about the different ways you can apply hormones. Because everybody says you got to swallow them or you got to slap a patch on. And if that patch doesn't work, you change the dose to that patch. And that patch doesn't work, you change the dose to that patch. I'm like, that's not a one size fits all thing.
And the patch is just estrogen. So, you know.
Well, and then remember, it's just
E2.
Right. So let's do that. So we've got the three types of estrogen that are primary functioners in women, E1, E2, E3. So share with me, you know, how you approach explaining what those differences are.
Okay. So women makes all three of them.
Yeah.
And traditionally, premenopausal, she makes 80% of the E3 or the estriol. And I view that as the protective weak estrogen. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have a lot of, you know, symptomatic control, maybe vaginal dryness. Mm-hmm. But it's a great protective estrogen that your body makes, mm-hmm. and we want to give it back to you. Mm-hmm. E2 is estradiol. This is the one that's bioidentically available in a tablet. In a patch, these are commercial products. So in a tablet, oral tablet, a patch, a vaginal cream, a vaginal tablet.
Yeah.
So estradiol is commercially available bioidentical estrogen, but it's just estradiol. And there's only certain strengths available. That's a stronger estrogen. It's about 80 times stronger than estriol.
Okay.
So, and it has lots of functions, 800 functions at every different tissue and cellular level in the body.
Okay.
The third estrogen is estrone. Again, a very strong estrogen. Mm-hmm. Your body will make estrone out of estradiol on its own. Mm-hmm. We don't have to give you back estrone. Mm-hmm. And estrone has three different metabolism pathways. Mm-hmm. So there's a neutral pathway, a good pathway, and a not so good pathway. Mm-hmm. So the last thing we want to do is give you estrone and have you metabolizing down that bad pathway. Right. So traditionally in compounding pharmacy, we give you something called biased to estrogens.
Right.
Estradiol, the strong positive estrogen, and estriol.
E3.
Yep. And the normal ratio we used to give biased in was 20-80, 20% estradiol. So we covered that 10 and 10% of the estrone estradiol, 80% estriol. Mm-hmm. The only time I see that not working sometimes for women is vasomotor is really, really bad. So the hot flashes, night flashes or night sweats are really bad. And I'll swap that out to 50-50 to just get through that period.
Okay. Gotcha. So that's an important distinction because women are just slapping on E2. And sometimes if they don't have a uterus, they don't even get progesterone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's the thing about that. And this is what the question that I ask is rhetorical, maybe sometimes sarcastic or a little snarky. But the question is, if you had your uterus removed, did they also remove the progesterone receptors from your breast, from your bone, from your liver, from your pancreas?
Brain?
Right. And that in your brain specifically, progesterone mixes with your GABA receptors. So to not prescribe, and, you know, if a woman had a hysterectomy, it's usually for some reason, right?
Right.
And so, and it doesn't have to be a life-saving reason. And I don't mean when I say the word convenience, we use the word elective. So there's two types of surgeries, life-saving and elective. Anything short of just literally saving your life is elective. Even if, you know, you're miserable and you can't really carry on, it's still elective technically. So we say elective. And so it's an elective procedure. But they've had fibroids. They've had adenomyosis. They've had maybe a thickened lining that they couldn't, you know, sort through. Maybe there's ovarian cysts. Maybe they had PCOS. Maybe they had multiple types of cysts that might put them at increased risk, you know, of ovarian cancer, because that just tips over and we don't know. And so women have hysterectomies for all a variety of reasons. But the other progesterone receptors are not removed.
Correct. And it does make sense if you look at, again, what we did traditionally. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, we gave them Premarin and Provera,
yeah.
Medroxyprogesterone. So with the risks associated with medroxyprogesterone, if you don't have a uterus, let's not give them that. So it makes sense history-wise, but that's ancient history.
Like the earth is flat, ancient history.
Yes. So it's, you know, yes, no uterus, no medroxyprogesterone.
Gotcha.
But I'm no medroxyprogesterone ever if you don't have to.
Right, exactly. Okay. You know, and that is a great point. You know, I'd never seen it that way because I'm like, how do people not get this? And it wasn't like you people. It was like, how do doctors not get this? But that's it. Because it's the takeaway, again, from that test, from that study, that then the
Women's Health Initiative.
Yes. That progestin was just not healthy and not safe.
Yes.
So then no uterus, no progestin. And so, and I just was like, well, we got to have progesterone.
Yes.
Because then we put the woman right back in that same estrogen dominant state that caused the fibroids, that caused the adenomyosis, that caused the ovarian cysts, that caused PCOS and all that kind of stuff anyway. The other thing is people say, can I, as they call it on the social media, I just dated myself on social media, on the World Wide Web, as they call it, raw dogging. Let's just raw dog our menopause. I'm like, okay, how's that working?
Yeah.
So, you know, I confess my mom did that. She has passed, so I can talk about her. She won't get me. And it wasn't pleasant. I remember that.
My greatest fear for when that happens, yeah, is they're ignoring the vaginal dryness, the vaginal pain and atrophy, yeah, which is also all the increasing bladder symptoms, and blaming it on something else.
Yes.
So by raw dogging it, you can be setting yourself up for needing Depends when you're 80. Okay. I am not going to wear Depends when I'm 80. I'm going to keep those tissues healthy. Those tissues need a low level of hormones. Yeah. So if nothing else, think about the long term, you know, the long term you can see, you can feel, you know, yes, you know, and the bones breaking, you know, and the hip breaking when you're 80.
Right. And the heart.
And the heart, and the brain.
And the breast health.
Yeah.
Because to be very sure, if estrogen was the cause of breast cancer, every woman would have it.
Yes.
It's the metabolism, the rogue metabolism of estrogen, which creates a metabolite that's stronger and more destructive, that creates breast cancer, along with other toxins, viruses, and things that come from the microbiome that go boo in the night. It's a complex, chronic condition, cancer is. It is not a one thing causing a cancer. It's never a one thing because it's a chronic disease.
And in this country, we've never looked at menopause, we lose a lot of our estriol, that protective estrogen.
That's right.
Is that increasing our breast cancer risks? We're, yeah, just not looking at that in this country.
Right. So sometimes when I go through the Dutch, I see where the estriol is higher, the E3, when that gets metabolized, and the E2 is lower. And so what you're saying in that is it's because we just need to reverse that, have a little more E2 and a little less E3, and we'll take care of the vasomotor symptoms.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Just need a different ratio for a short period of time.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense. All right. So what do you think is the number one myth about hormone replacement therapy across the board?
I think it's it causes breast cancer.
I think so too.
I think that's a horrific myth. And there's one particular synthetic hormone that increases your risk, and it doesn't cause it. It increases your risk. Smoking increases your risk of breast cancer more than any synthetic hormone. I mean, there's so many things that increase your risk of breast cancer, but we've told women no hormones. I had a doctor tell a woman that he wouldn't prescribe her progesterone because his Hippocratic oath said he would do no harm. So it's so ingrained. It's just so ingrained that it causes harm.
I have nothing to say about this. I don't even know what to say about that.
I know.
Oh, Hippocrates rolling over in his grave, I'm sure.
But it's that misconception of progesterone is medroxyprogesterone. It's not. There's study after study after study showing it's not.
So then some women take progesterone, and it is the natural, or it is the, you know, the natural one. And they go, as they are saying, again, on social media, cray cray.
Are they taking too much? Are they taking it alone and they need estrogen too? Are they metabolizing it incorrectly?
Right.
You know, there's so many things to look at.
That's right. And that's exactly what's happening. So they're usually taking an oral capsule at bedtime. They're told by their prescriber, their physician or provider, that this will cause them to go to sleep and all is well. They're having like dreams where they're just, you know, going crazy in their dreams, can't sleep, jumping out of their skin, their gut bloats, their skin crawls, their brain just swirls, they're foggy, you know, they're anxious. They're just off the chart. And that is and it's interesting because the literature is calling that, this is the medical literature, progesterone intolerance.
Instead of what's the dosage, what is the dosage form, what is the balance?
Right. So could we change that perspective and saying, instead of saying intolerance is, okay, kind of like anxiety, I use that as a pointer to where do you need to feel safe and how can we help you feel safe versus that being an end diagnosis that requires a diagnostic code and a treatment. Same with progesterone intolerance. It doesn't require a diagnostic code and treatment. It requires understanding as to why you feel that.
Right.
And so if you have the GABA receptors that are extra excitability instead of relaxation, and we can see it in the genomic pathways, then, you know, topically, vaginally, lower doses. I mean, one could even do a low dose a couple times a day versus one big dose at night.
Correct.
And so, you know, there's ways, you know, that you can approach your needs specifically with a lot of the options available.
Yeah. We compound oral progesterone capsules. I've compounded as low as a 5 milligram capsule. The commercial capsule out there is 100 milligrams. That's the starting dose.
And
unfortunately, they put it in peanut oil.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, what's up with the peanut oil, do you think?
Progesterone is oil soluble.
Okay.
So they went with an oil. They just didn't go with a good oil. You know, there's so many oils they could have chose, and they went with peanut oil.
Yeah.
But once all the FDA studies are in, you're kind of locked in.
Gotcha. Oh, yeah, that's true. And I think that's a really good point because it just takes so long.
Yes.
To get through that process.
Yes.
All right. So I'm going to poke the bear here in your, like we haven't already, but this is wonderful. Thank you for being so candid and transparent with just, this is just wonderful education. Okay. Why compounding? How safe are you? Who are you? What do we know?
Okay. There are illegitimate pharmacies out there, and they're in the news right now. So there's internet pharmacies that are compounding, you know, Ozempic and Mounjaro equivalents incorrectly right now. Mm-hmm. But if you ask the state they're locating it in, if they have a pharmacy license,
mm-hmm.
the majority of them don't. So if you're looking for a compounding pharmacy that your provider will feel comfortable with, that you'll feel comfortable with. You want to make sure it's a state-licensed pharmacy. There's a physical location. There is a head pharmacist in charge. We're regulated by so many different pharmacy regulations, and on top of the pharmacy regulations, specific compounding regulations. So they're called the USP standards, United States Pharmacopeia. And they actually all just got revived in, there's a huge revision out there where they got very, very much strengthened 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So compounding pharmacies follow State Board of Pharmacy guidelines. The inspectors are in here about every 2 years to make sure I'm doing things properly. Mm-hmm. And then we follow the USP guidelines. And even the FDA can come in here and inspect us to make sure we're following FDA USP guidelines. So we have lots of regulatory watching over us. Mm-hmm. But the thing we're doing is we're taking a FDA approved starting medication, testosterone, estradiol, progesterone, or USP monograph approved medication, estriol, and we're combining it in different ways for the patient. So end result is that end product is not FDA approved. It can't be. We've changed it. Yeah. So if I add flavor to your child's antibiotic, it's no longer FDA approved.
But the child will take the antibiotic then and get well.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Right. The starting product is FDA approved, but okay. I changed it and individualized it for your child. Yeah. Once I do that, but you have to make sure you're comfortable with your compounding pharmacy and the way they do things. There's different like accrediting associations out there. I think there's three different ones now that can come in and accreditate different pharmacies. Mm-hmm. It's an expensive process and very, very time consuming, but it can be done. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of ways to check your pharmacy as the appropriate pharmacy to go to. But one of the best ways is I invite all practitioners and patients to come view my pharmacy. It's all full of windows. You can see what we're doing.
Yeah. I put my nose up against it.
You can view what my compounders are doing. You can view the materials we're using. I'll open my procedures to anybody. Nothing's proprietary for me. Yeah. Yeah, I'm an open book here. I want everyone to know I'm doing things right and I'm doing them correctly. Yeah. I can pull documents for any compound I made by just looking up that date and pulling the document right out and showing you exactly what I used, how much I used.
Yeah. I don't think that the commercial pharmacies can say the same. I'm just going to throw that out there because of my experience as a physician. Sometimes they don't even know what's on their shelf. And it's been very frustrating for patients just to get regular pharmaceutical support. I have a great story from years ago when I was practicing in Colorado and I had a mom bring her teenage daughter to me who had seizures. And she was on seizure medicine. And despite being on the seizure medicine, she kept having seizures. And so that impacted her ability to take driver's training, to go on school trips, and to attend to her functions. And so it really impacted her life. And the girl was devastated. She was in a near state of depression because of that. It was just so disrupting to her life. So they bring her to me and say, can you sort this out? I'm like, yeah. So what I did was a gut study. And then what I did was a food sensitivity study and also an IgE, which has to do with food allergy. And we found she had a sensitivity and allergy. So IgG and IgE to corn and maltodextrin parts of the corn. So I looked on the seizure medicine, Dilaudid, and it had corn and maltodextrin. So, and what she had been to, there was only like one or two pediatric neurologists in the area, and she was kicked out of the practice because the neurologist thought she wasn't taking her medicine and that she was lying to him. I mean, can you imagine the shame, the humiliation, the abuse that that girl went through? And we found that it took me one visit. And then the follow-up visit, I had the answer. We had then her medication compounded. She never had another seizure. I mean, this is the power of compounding pharmacy. This is the power of one size doesn't fit all. This is the power of when your body does something in response to what you put in it, listen to it.
Yeah.
Find your way through it. Don't accept that there's something wrong with you. It's all in your head. Don't let people marginalize you. Become an advocate and say, I'm going to figure this out. Now, I'm not saying go dive in the internet all by yourself. I'm saying this is not the sink or swim method. It is not, because you can get into some really strong misconceptions about things. Find your team that you can literally trust, that you know has got your back and know will listen to you and will believe you and understand that your experience that you're having as a patient is valid. It's valid because it's you. And all of a sudden, something that's rare becomes 100% because it happened to you.
Right. You are a population of one. Exactly. All of our medications in the United States that are FDA approved are based on statistical approval of populations.
Yes.
But, and they will work for, you know, a significant amount of the population. They'll work perfectly. But for that population of one they don't work for, we have to figure out something else that works. Right. And that's why we exist as compounding pharmacists.
Yeah. And that's why you're heroes in many people's eyes, because of the ability for people to have their lives impacted in a powerful way to help them, not just with symptoms, but solve problems by understanding really what's going on with all of our unique biochemical individuality. That's the way to go, and that's the way forward. So parting words of wisdom, anything that you can, that you've got for us? Or, I mean, we've really tapped your tank there today, and I thank you for that.
You were asking about dosage forms. You know, yes. We like transdermal, we like vaginal, we like putting hormones in something where they'll cross that skin barrier into the fat cells and get absorbed through the body without going through the liver first.
Yes.
So, yes.
Okay.
There are other dosage forms when those don't work. You know, yes, you can go to oral, but you have to understand oral estrogen will slightly increase your risk of cardiac events, heart attack, stroke. You know, you can go to something we call a sublingual troche. It dissolves against your cheek or under your tongue. So there's lots of different options. Okay. There's people doing injectables, you know, and there's women doing injectable testosterone. I'm trying to figure out how it works with what's available, but it's out there. And there's people doing inserted pellets. So there's lots of different forms.
and I've done pellets for both men and women. If you're a woman and want pellets, you have to not have a uterus, because I don't want to put a pellet in you and cause bleeding and not be able to stop it. So even if we put progesterone, because even if we give you a pellet, it's inserted under the skin and we give you progesterone, we still, the dose is still, you know, so I always do it without a uterus. And again, also we aren't aiming for blood. We're looking at patterns. So that's going to be urine. That's going to be urine patterns. That's going to be pathways. And we don't have to then bring those levels back to when you were 20. We need to abate symptoms. We need to see inflammatory markers come down. Bone densities get stronger, breast health and mammograms and MRIs change, because those dense breasts, when handled correctly and metabolized correctly, can return to normal tissues. I've seen that happen. I've treated women who've had breast cancer and who've been on tamoxifen and want their life back, who can't tolerate things and they're just so miserable, they would rather die than have the treatment. So the door is open. The possibilities are unlimited. And as long as we understand your individuality, your needs, and your biochemistry.
Yeah. I always say blood levels, if a doctor's looking at blood levels, are you're on an 8-lane road in Chicago and the blood levels are the outside bumpers. Okay. You got 8 lanes between there. All you're doing is trying to fix the symptoms. You're not aiming for a specific blood level. You know, the blood might not move at all, but all the symptoms go away. That's good.
I love it. I just saw somebody careening off the bumper. Boom, boom. That is a great picture. I'm going to keep that in mind. Well, thank you very much for your time. I know you got to get back to your clients, and I'm going to press on. I've got some patients as well, but I thank you for taking your time today to handle this very important question and to give us a delightful, insightful, and just well-educated conversation. Thank you, Mary.
It was my pleasure.
All right.
Thank you to all of our listeners who tuned in today to the Dr. Mary Lauder Show, where our guest was Mary Heim. And we talked about hormonal therapy, taking back our voice and our choice. If you like this episode, rate and review, certainly share it with your friends because there's a lot of great information here. And go to our website for more information, www.drmarylauder.com. And also note in the show notes, there'll be a document for you to have regarding the various types and forms of hormone replacement therapy that you get to choose from and use as an education form. Take good care. See you next time.
That's a wrap for this episode of the Dr. Mary Lauder Podcast Show. I hope you've heard something today that made you think, laugh, or say, well, now that was a plot twist I didn't expect. Just remember, your health journey is more than lab results and supplements. It's spirit, soul, and story, and sometimes a gadget or two you probably should have returned. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcasts, and please share our podcast with someone you love. If you didn't like the show, well, maybe don't tell anybody then. And if you want more soulful medicine, curious conversations, and tools that actually help, visit me anytime at drmarylauder.com. Until next time, stay kind and stay curious. Music today is provided by Mr. Dave Evans. He composed, played, and engineered this song specifically for our podcast, and it's called Soul Strings, an acoustic reflection of the healing path. Thanks, Dave. It's great music.